we have to develop some kind of global critical mass of thinking individuals who are thinking on a very broad base, taking into account the actual facts of the medical facts of the virus, the immunology, the genetics, the virology of it. The immunology has to expand into psycho neuroimmunology because the mind-body connection is very, very real, as I've shown in the past and I continue to show. That's also got to be factored in, and that comes into moving away from this pure biomedical model driven by opportunists into a biopsychosocial situation where there's common sense, where common sense prevails based on authentic information.
In this episode, I had the great pleasure of once again speaking with Dr. Ian Weinberg about his experiences and opinions around the COVID epidemic and what this is going to mean for humanity moving forward. Ian shares his opinion on the data that has been collected around the COVID pandemic, as well as the latest information regarding the vaccine. We chat about the psychosocial impact of fear on the immune system, which is really fascinating to me because it is simply my opinion that if we don't watch the news and we stay away from social media, there's a really good chance you will probably not get as sick as you may have if your immune system is stifled by paralyzing fear. To read Dr. Ian Weinberg's articles on the COVID pandemic and even his highly prophetic story that was written many years ago, please go to the show notes. All the links to the articles on his LinkedIn profile are right there. You know, the last time we spoke was probably just as lockdown started. Since then, you've been on the front line, the proverbial front line. You've experienced the bug itself, and you've written so many really compelling articles on the pandemic that I wanted to get your opinion where you think we're headed, as well as, you know, what this means from a psychoneuro impact on having gone through this episode of being controlled as a world population and what that does to your psychology.
You know, it's interesting. I wrote an article, which is a short story about 3 or 4 years ago, which is actually, funny enough, also on LinkedIn. And it was a story about a global pandemic. It wasn't a virus. It was something else. It was something really science fictional. But what had happened was people started getting ill around the world. And they were confidently looking for a virus. They didn't find a virus, but they found a genetic aberration, which they managed to clear. And despite having found the cause and clearing it, the morbidity and mortality continued to climb until my hero was a stoned physician, sort of way out in the wings, who remembered this thing called psychoneuroimmunology. And he found that the only guys that were surviving were the guys who had a mind stage of acceptance, doing their thing, hopeful, believing in the bigger picture. But the rest, who were gripped by fear, were succumbing to the situation. And in fact, this is long after they actually neutralized the cause. So people were dying as a result of their own fatal chemistry. And so I've got this very strong deja vu feeling at the moment that yes, there was a virus, there is a virus. I will definitely endorse the fact that there was a virus. It's worse than flu. Not much worse than flu, but it's worse than flu. I usually get seasonal flu, and this year I got this thingy, which turned out to be a little worse than seasonal flu. But even while I had it, I was oscillating between just seeing out the virus versus the fear that was derived from all these nasty pictures seen on TV, which was sort of played and replayed of critically ill people being wheeled into ICUs and ventilated and the whole story. And even myself, being sort of a seasoned clinician, really being in a COVID hospital, had to literally auto-coach myself out of this mind state whenever I saw my oxygen saturation dropping a wee bit. And the oxygen didn't really drop below 90, so it wasn't in any serious spectrum. But just that mind state was for me a personal illustration of what this chemistry can actually do. It can kill you. And so if you've got comorbidities, if you've got a real rampant virus and you're a diabetic and you're hypertensive and you're in a high-risk age group, and you now become exposed to this incredible fear that I have COVID-19, and if you're unfortunate enough to have to be admitted to a clinic because your oxygen levels dropped a bit too low, well, your chemistry is going to do the rest. And we've seen that. We've actually seen that. Look, they're anecdotal cases, and I've written about them. But we've actually seen people who were admitted COVID negative, PCR negative, who actually became infected after their admission. And then they were isolated, and the families weren't allowed to see them. And now the fear was gripped by the isolation and almost the abandonment. Well, then the condition spiraled into a fatal situation. So very much so. I think that's my take at the moment. I know that there's, and of course the whole PCR story is another whole story in itself. But I'm afraid, and I will say this again, that our chemistry is either, it's a double-edged sword. It either works in our favor or it actually works totally against us. And just by the way, the 1918 Spanish flu, most of those cases were fatal on the basis of the cytokine storm. It basically caused immune systems to run rampant, and a lot of the morbidity mortality was associated with the immune systems gone crazy.
So your last article was entitled The Endgame, and that really spoke about this vaccine that I believe has been waiting in the wings probably for the last 5 years since Gates came out and spoke about this impending pandemic. I'm not anti-vax, but I really am opposed to being forced into doing something that I don't feel I have control over. I think the psychosocial impact of this circus is being used as a tool of manipulation. And, you know, it just defies credulity that this is all about control and making money. I mean, maybe I'm naive, but if you just take a step back and look at the way this has played out, I fail to believe it's been scripted. I think it was just a perfect storm and it's taken on a life of its own. What are your thoughts around that?
So I differ a little from Randy. I mean, Randy and I have long, long chats and have for a long time. And Randy sort of can't steer away from the fact that there is some kind of background global conspiracy. And there are times when I tend to agree and then there are other times when I don't. But If you follow this thing through, so if you look at immunology, for example, the PCR was developed in the 1980s. It's an old test. It's a brilliant test. It's been used for many, many other things in genetic engineering. So that's been going a long time. The formation of messenger RNA vaccinations has been in the pipeline for a while, as is DNA vaccination. So these things are not new. They've all been sitting there. They've been developing them. Because don't forget, they've been developing these things still to cater for the SARS epidemic of 2003. So things have been going for a while. These things are not new, and they've been moving towards developing the technology for one day having to have to use them. So along comes this illness, and yes, we see lots of people around the world getting ill from a virus from the East, which, by the way, applies to most viruses every year, seasonal flu, rhinoviruses, we see them all the time. For some reason, and I'm going to borrow your term, the perfect storm, there were a lot of opportunists. There was a lot of technology available. They were looking for an opportunity to use it. It all happened. The PCR was adopted. PCR is heavily flawed in this situation in that it's much, much too sensitive. It's used in high power genetic engineering. So what happens is it goes through about 30 or 40 cycles, that by the time it's finished, just a fragment of this virus's genetic material makes you a positive, which doesn't mean to say you have any viable virus. It just means to say there's some viral debris sitting in your pharynx. That's all it says. So the Australian study showed that of all those COVID positive cases on PCR, only 15% of outpatients had viable virus. In other words, virus that can be passed on, that is infectious. So it all started with this PCR, and they have made an absolute fortune on the PCR. I mean, the PCR, I don't know what the number is at the moment, how many people have actually been tested, but it is surpassing a billion or two already. We're going into about 2 billion PCR tests, each one costing varying amounts. So that's the first thing, and it's just dishing up an enormous amount of false positives. And so, as I've also written, you can be PCR positive and have all the symptoms that you could attribute to COVID, but in fact you have a rhinovirus. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that. So the rhinovirus gives you all the same symptoms. And in a person with respiratory problems, it's going to look a lot worse. That person's going to have to be admitted. So therein already is the major flaw. But they seem to get the right technology. They had global media raise the hype, the fear, all the images. Everyone ran for their PCRs, stirred it up a bit more with some terrible images of ICUs, more PCRs, numbers are increasing, graphs are going up, bearing in mind that there's unfortunate false positives going with it, stirring it up and then thinking, well, now that we've got this global epidemic and there's people fearing and now we've got lockdown, which is destroying economies, there's this urgency now to open up. Well, now you've only got one of two choices to open up. Either you drop lockdown and you rely on herd immunity and get people to infect themselves, which they weren't prepared to do because it's inhuman and it's unethical, etc., even though herd immunity is what we have every year from the seasonal flu in any case. So because this has now been raised to the much higher level of hype and all the ethics and all the fears that go with it, you have to now go lockdown. They basically created their own script and they're forced to live their script now. You can't backtrack now. So hang on a bit, let's abandon lockdown. This is really just a little bit more virulent than flu. Most people that are dying probably would have died within the next year or two because they had severe comorbidities. But now you can't backtrack because you now have to live your script. Comes in the next level of opportunists, and that is the vaccine guys, who have just been raring to go because they want to test their new technology, which has been sitting in the wings. And it's great technology. I must tell you that I spent the last weekend just going over every single lecture I could find on genetic engineering and immunology. And it is absolutely unbelievable. It is so phenomenal where the human ingenuity and technology has taken us to. So yes, so we've got a pretty safe messenger RNA, mRNA vaccine, which the beauty of mRNA vaccine is it doesn't go into the nucleus. So it doesn't fiddle with our genetic material. It sits in the cytoplasm and it's already mRNA. So mRNA goes straight through the ribosomes and forms the antigens, which stimulates the immune system without fiddling with our DNA material, our genome. So that's all okay. But as you say, we haven't been given this choice because this script says we can't interact and threaten herd immunity because we won't be able to cope. But no healthcare facility has been totally overrun to date. Oh, things got a bit tight, but nothing's been overrun. But the script will not allow us to backtrack anymore. We have to live the script. And the next act of the script is the vaccine. So to open up society, borders, travel, we have to get now what they're referring to as a bio visa. We can't move without the vaccination. Which now brings me to the next very important question, and one that I am now discussing with my colleagues. What about us that have had full-blown COVID and actually have antibodies? We're all tested, we've got antibodies, we're completely immune. The next part of the script comes up, yes, but they've been noting that antibody levels are dropping, even from those who've had the illness. But then I respond, but hang on, guys, have you forgotten your fundamental immunology? When you form your immunity against, for example, a virus, you've got your T cells and your B cells. But of the T cells, you get your killer T cells or cytotoxic T cells, which are CD8s. your helper T cells, which are your CD4s, but you get another whole group of cells called the memory cells. The memory T cells, they remember every bug that they formed antibodies against. So they're trying to rewrite not just the script, but immunology to force everybody across the board to have vaccinations and to get the BioVisa. And so my last question was, who is going to take responsibility then for giving a guy like me with antibodies a vaccination? Are you going to induce a cytokine storm and kill me off from the vaccine? And that, by the way, applies to everybody who may have immunity, whether they know it or not. Not everyone has had an antibody test done. Sure. We're finding a lot of people with antibodies that can't recall having had a full-blown COVID illness.
So having the vaccine, if you've got antibodies, could actually kill you.
We don't know where we stand. And my esteemed colleagues, the guys who are supposed to be the experts, the big experts, cannot answer this question. So I'm saying, where to from here? Well, one of the guys says, well, we're working now on the ability to test memory T cells. So I said, well, how long now is it going to take to test memory T cells? Can we sit and wait? Is it going to take 2 years, 3 years? In the meantime, what do guys like me do? Sit and wait, can't have the vaccine, can't travel. We may not even be able to travel out of our province, never mind out of our country, if they enforce the rules that are going to, the conditions that go with the vaccine. So I don't really know where this is going to go. Mm. It's wide open. The script writers have come to a bit of an impasse. Where do we go from here in the script?
No, it's a circus. So, I mean, your flu vaccine changes every year because flu mutates. We know that this is not the first COVID, it's not a novel virus. It mutates all the time. So we've got this vaccine, which has its shortfallings, as you've said. But what if next year it mutates into another COVID type of strain, which it probably will? There'll always be some kind of new virus. Then what? Are we always going to be forced into the situation where you have to be vaccinated against everything? So yeah, the ethics of the situation, it's just a circus.
Well, absolutely. So first of all, yes, to pick up on what you said about the novel virus. So it's a coronavirus. Coronavirus has been with us for millions of years. So the last big coronavirus of note was SARS. That was 2003. And by the way, this coronavirus, of course, COVID-19, shares almost 80% of the genetic, the genome of the SARS coronavirus. They're almost the same. It's just 20% difference. That's how much it's mutated, not that much. There's now evidence to show that if you've got antibodies against the original coronavirus, you've got antibodies against this one. So there's some cross-reactivity now appearing on the antibody testing. So yes, and then there's going to be mutation. There is always mutation. Viruses mutate. Well, you see, I go back to the same story. So what new act are we going to write in the script? Does this mean that we are going to have coronavirus vaccines every year? Because we now have this evidence of the kind of pandemic that coronavirus has caused. Well, when you look at that, I mean, if you look at all the figures, so the recovery rate, the people that have recovered from coronavirus is just over 90%. So just over 90% of people have fully recovered. How are we going to factor that into the new script? How is that going to be factored in? That's almost approaching the flu mortality. So it's slightly worse than the flu mortality. That's all it is. So how are we going to write this script? You see, what's happened is that mankind has painted itself into a corner. They are totally cornered. And there is no common sense. It's purely reflex response driven by opportunists. And that's where we sit. And we are so totally dumb. How did we become so dumb? Mm. So we basically ended up living our own script, which was very poorly thought out, but we're living a dumb script. But look at the price we're paying for this dumb script. I mean, we may have lost, I don't know what the actual figure now is, 300,000, 350,000 deaths to date. attributed directly to the illness from the virus. But look at the people that are dying from the fallout, the people who haven't been able to get their usual care, the people, the suicides. We are dealing here with a global suicide epidemic at the moment. There's going to be starvation, mass starvation. Those numbers are going to absolutely dwarf the epidemic direct mortality, absolutely.
What really astounds me is how easy it is to get the masses paralyzed in a state of fear. Just using the media, which we should know, is so slanted towards its own agenda. Social media specifically, if we don't realize this by now, I don't see, you know, a future for the human race if we're literally just being puppeteered all over the place here. And I mean, from the psycho-neuro side of things, if you want to avoid getting sick, don't watch the news. Stay off social media and chances are you're never going to get ill. It's only when you start buying into the paranoia that your immune system suppresses. It's a very worrying place to be, a very worrying time in human history to be. And I think that the speed and the proliferation of misinformation is ultimately going to be our downfall if we don't start waking up and asking questions.
Absolutely. I think humanity is looking desperately to a critical mass of individuals who will be able to put the facts on the table, but the broadest facts, the epidemic, the so-called epidemic, the pandemic, its fallout, what it's doing, how virulent is it really, who has actually succumbed, what is the prognosis for a given individual, how do we withdraw from this space? We have to develop some kind of global critical mass of thinking individuals who are thinking on a very broad base, taking into account the actual facts of the medical facts of the virus, the immunology, the genetics, the virology of it. The immunology has to expand into psychoneuroimmunology because the mind-body connection is very, very real, as I've shown in the past and I continue to show. That's also got to be factored in, and that comes into moving away from this pure biomedical model driven by opportunists into a biopsychosocial situation where there's common sense, where common sense prevails based on authentic information. And we have to somehow steer away from these captured media. The media is captured. It's captured by opportunists, by power mongers. It's captured for many reasons. There's lots of agendas. But what about simple folk like you and me who are trying to basically live our lives in the best way that we can? But as you say, we are exposed to these things. That the media is part of our lives. We're exposed to this. And it's filtering out the stuff that people need. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, it's falling back on this need for the coalescing of a critical mass of thinking individuals who collectively have the insights and the knowledge to somehow neutralize and counteract what's coming from the popular media.
And, you know, like you mentioned, the powers that be, I think the data is so slanted and so confused, and you know, we can't actually start unpicking this mess, because if the PCR test isn't that accurate and the deaths reported aren't necessarily purely COVID deaths, so they're off the hook in many, many ways. But it really is up to the individual to start going, I'm not going to stand for this. It's a very frightening situation.
I'm sitting here, I'm a medical specialist, I'm in the medical environment. And even in the medical environment, there's total confusion between pretty high-level specialists in these fields. So if you've got such dissent in the medical profession itself, what hope does the lay person have of coming across some authentic information where we can't agree with ourselves? I mean, we're already at a situation where we've agreed not to even discuss it because it's going to land up in a bum fight. We can't fight anymore, because we disagree so much. So how did it happen that there should be so much dissent in an educated group in the medical environment? How did this happen? That's how deep this bias has gone. It's gone right to the roots of the profession.
Nice.
And I'll add to that. I've got a brother who's in California, and he's really high powered in the maths statistics environment. And I asked him just to help me out, because he's a big figures guy. I said, go onto the CDC website. Go on, any person go onto the CDC. Take 1 week and just give me the figures for COVID-19. And he came back to me with a couple of spreadsheets after reviewing this, and he said, I can't make head or tail of this. I cannot make head or tail of this. He said, there's so much overlap here. It's things like people with pneumonia and flu, people with pneumonia, flu, and COVID. People with pneumonia, no flu, but COVID. And so it goes. There are five columns every day, and no one can make head or tail of these figures. To quote the former chief of the Cox Institute in Germany, which is a massive institute, which was developed from Robert Koch. Robert Koch was the guy who discovered TB. So very much from the Koch situation. And he went to Angela Merkel and he said, Madam Chancellor, I just want you to answer one question. That's all I want to know. How many people are dying from COVID and how many people are dying with COVID? That's all I want to know. And they could never answer. To date, they have never been able to answer the question.
I think also one of the biggest problems is it's still a reality, is the general population is looking to the government to save them. Government's not going to save you. They're looking for their doctor to save them or the pharmacy to save them. They're not prepared to do the work, look after themselves, or take responsibility for their health. And you're seeing this with the comorbidities, where before COVID, people were like, well, so I've got diabetes, so there's a pill for that. But now we're seeing what a mess it's become with comorbidities and how much more vulnerable we are for simply not taking responsibility for our health. So there's so many more social themes that have spun off this. It's almost like we've got this critical mass as a human population on so many levels. And this has created like a convergence.
Well, that's a very, very important point. I mean, that is a critical point. If we are to derive anything positive from this mess, and it really is an absolute undefined mess at the moment, it's a script that no one knows who's going to write the next act for. But if we're going to derive anything positive out of this script, we need to come back to one single thing, and that's called responsibility for our own health. It really has to come back to that. Because at the end of the day, it is about our health and well-being, because that's going to be the decider. It's all components of health and wellness. There is no doubt. And we really need to know now that if you're grossly overweight or it's gone on to a type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, and you've got a cardiac component as well, and you're going to early renal failure, and you've got hypertension. These are all the things that we can do a lot about from a preventive primary health perspective. These are the things we can do a lot. And I think at the end of the day, it really is asking us to take responsibility for our own wellness. If anything, that's what this little mess has taught us.
No, absolutely. It really has. So if you could go back and rewrite that story, that science fiction story, and rewrite the ending, given what we've learned this year, how would it play out?
So that story had a very sad ending, because what did I call the guy? I gave him a really funny name. Anyway, let's call him Stanley. So Stanley was a goofed out, perpetually stoned individual, and he was trying to locate extraterrestrials, and he picked up a strange beam, which, by the way, turned out to be the source of my story. It affected the genetic makeup of individuals and affected their immunity. But then the beam disappeared. And they had put together this genetic engineering to correct everybody's genome, and it was going to be put into your body with a plasmid, exactly the way they're doing it now for the messenger RNA vaccine. And they did all that, but people continued to die. But then old Stanley remembered his psych and neuroimmunology, that there's a mind-body connection. And he went around to find out who had survived. And he found a couple of golfers who said, no matter what happens, they're going to be finishing their perfect round of golf. And he found a couple of psychotics who were totally unperturbed by what was going on, and a couple of alcoholics who were so inebriated that they weren't aware of an epidemic. So these are the guys who actually were fine because they were unperturbed. So Stanley said, right, I've nailed it. It's all about the mind state. So he put together this whole presentation, and he went to present it to committees of the top academic institutions in his part of the world, but no one would listen to him because he didn't look right, he had this flowing beard, and he didn't have the right credentials. So he didn't get past the front desk because he didn't have the credentials. Even though he had the answer, the medical fraternity, the scientific fraternity was so biased that they couldn't actually see the wood for the trees. That here is a guy who actually has an answer, that he will actually show evidence, even though it's a bit anecdotal, he'll show evidence that there's a strong mind fear component that's perpetuating this pandemic. But because he didn't have the right appearance, the right credentials, no one would listen to him. And so the story ends, and Stanley went back to his little cave, lit up another joint, and watched the light slowly go out. So that was the story I wrote. And you know, it's like this strong deja vu. I've got this horrible feeling that the script is playing itself out now with this fear component. And I don't know how we're going to extricate ourselves from the script.
I suppose it's another extinction. Those who can think for themselves will survive and go on to carry on. And those who can't get their heads around this and who are comfortable or getting some kind of feedback from being in a state of fear will eventually become extinct. And unfortunately, having the ability to almost foresee what's happening, or be able to stand back and see it playing out, it's terrifying. But maybe that's part of the natural evolution of things. You know, you can't shake up everybody and say, hey, stop, think for yourself, ask questions. We've got to get to that point where our backs are against the wall and the sort of that ingrained fight back comes to the fore and says, no, I've had enough. I've got to take control over my life. And not everybody does that, as frustrating as it is.
It's interesting you mention that. I mean, the New Testament words come to my mind as you're speaking, separating the wheat from the chaff. I mean, that's exactly what's happening. And who would ever have believed that Darwinian evolution would play out in this way, and that one of the major components would be the mind state of the people that is contributing to the selecting out? And I think that's it. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly what's happening. We're going through an evolutionary process.
Yeah. And it's frightening if you can see the big picture, but you just do what you can for those with eyes to see and those with ears to hear, as they say, we'll be okay. That's all we can do.
It is what it is. It's real. It's playing out as we speak. And yes, it does ask of us to transcend. And yes, there are those who will be able to, and there are those who are not going to be able to. And unfortunately, the universe, if you want to call it that, is not fair. And we all have a heritage. And those of us who've been blessed with good genetics and early nurture narratives are okay. And those of us who have been unfortunate with not having the optimal genetics and nurture narrative may not survive and succumb. But it is what it is, unfortunately. At the end of the day, I mean, I've always said that. Everyone said to me, yeah, but you can change. I said, you know, you can change as much as the packaging has allowed you to change. I mean, you didn't decide your heritage. You didn't decide your genetics. You didn't just decide your nurture and everything that followed. You weren't consulted when you were made. And so you're the finished package. You're the final product. And look, we'd like to believe we've all got what it takes to transcend, but we don't. And there's going to be a lot who don't transcend, and unfortunately they're going to succumb. And this is a natural selection process. It's going to be the survival of those I don't want to say the survival of the fittest. It's going to be the survival of those who are the most adaptable or adaptive, and those have the most intrinsic resources, and that is a given.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there, that ability to adapt. That has been, whether it's, you know, people who've survived the Holocaust, their ability to adapt and move on, or whatever, you know, tragedy throughout human history, our ability to adapt and persevere and think outside of the box has always stood humanity in good stead. So that's, I think, where we've got to really focus our attention.
You know, I keep on thinking of that book called The Fourth Turning by Strauss and Howe. They wrote it in the 90s, I think 97. And they show that humanity goes through cycles of 80 years, 4 or 20 years each. And the last cycle is a destructive cycle. And it's a destruction of everything. There's no sacred cows. And according to them, 2008 marked the beginning of the fourth cycle of this, the fourth turning of this particular cycle, where they said that it's going to have to be reduced to nothing, and to be the new order will arise out of the ashes. And I think that that's really what's happening. Everything's being questioned. It's going to flatten everything, and only that which really has a value contribution is going to emerge out of it into a new order, a new dispensation. And we already see, I mean, the new normal changed a long time. The new normal, well, the old normal has gone. The new environment is changing all the time. Nothing is definitive yet. There's no end in sight. We don't actually know when and what it's going to look like. So this now is the acceleration of change now that is happening. And now it calls upon our greatest resilience. From here on, calls upon our greatest resilience, because we don't have a frame of reference anymore. We have our heritage, our common sense, our ability to reason, the ability to contribute value based on empathy, where we found ourselves and when we found ourselves in that particular place. That's all we can really do. And that's what we're all doing at the moment, is maintaining life as best as we can, trying to neutralize fear, illness, and everything that comes with it, and maybe contributing towards some kind of new collective order.
Well, hopefully it's a phoenix coming from the ashes, if we're lucky, if we decide to do, you know, put it that way. So, Ian, thank you so much for your pearls of wisdom. It's always so amazing having these discussions.
But thank you. I mean, you're always inspiring. I mean, you basically bring out the best in me when we talk. So,
it's a pleasure. Thank you.
You've got to take a bow for this as well.
Thank you so much. That's very flattering.
Thank you for joining me again for another great conversation. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcast. And if you have any questions for further topics, please feel free to email me at podcast@reinventhealth.co.za or leave a voice message on our Anchor FM page. This episode was sponsored by The Nutrition Prescription by Reinvent Health. The one thing we all have a degree of control over is how we manage our health through the choices we make. Believe it or not, healthy nutrition is more simple than we've been led to believe when you know what to do. If you're going to get away with anything positive out of 2020, let it be a wake-up call to make a change. Use this time in the best way possible. Give your body what it truly needs in order to thrive. No matter your age, income level, or health state, you can learn new habits that will help you feel stronger, more energized, and motivated to live better. The Nutrition Prescription is an online learning program designed for anyone wanting to learn the basics of healthy nutrition and customize the knowledge into a way of life that does not involve restrictive dieting. Once you've signed on, you will receive access to hours of videos, meal plans, recipes, articles, and regular webinars that will keep you up to date with the most current thinking around health and nutrition. To sign up or find out more, go to reinventhealth.co.za and click on online learning.